Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on LiveParanormal.com and History FM. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
Thank you. welcome everybody to another episode of Paranormal Therapy. I am Wes Forsythe, your host for the evening. I'm the webmaster over at iHost.com. And if you're having any audio problems, seems to be with one again. I might have to start on a because I'm getting a little red pops on my Skype screen that doesn't excite me. But we'll see what we can do. Hopefully, it'll work itself out. Don't forget to sign my Facebook page and like me on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter. I am so tired tonight. I had such a full weekend. I've been on the road all weekend. I just might be going to Waverly Hill a couple of times in summer. It was dead to you. Dead Winter Convention, March 8th through 10th in Somerset, Kentucky. I'll be set up down there. Hit me in Vegas this month. January just got old from me. That's about the only way I can explain it. You can also catch me maybe at the Mystic Paranormal Fair in Lexington, Kentucky, February 9th through 10th. I have links to both of those events on my website. Tonight's guest for the hot seat section of Paranormal Filler, I've got just a moment. I'll have Matt Borland and Heather Murrell on the line. They're from a group called 417 PRG, Paranormal Research Group, out of Springfield, Missouri.
On this program do not necessarily reflect those of the management, but they should.
And I am here. I'm just having one of those weekends. What can I tell you? We've been on the road all weekend, and I'm glad I had a easy show to deal with tonight. Because if I didn't, I'd probably just sat here and played music for the entire show again. Tell me in the chat room, is the audio getting any better? The warning messages have finally went away. I was getting some little red flags on Skype, which just excited the heck out of me. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and try to get my guest online here. I'm going to see, yep. Let's see if they answer the phone.
Hello?
Hello, Heather. This is Wes Forsythe. Okay, now I'm going to go ahead and try to get Matt on, see if it works as cleanly as that did.
Okay.
Hello, Matt.
Yes.
Well, except for Skype giving me fits tonight, the technical part just went smooth as silk. I want to welcome you two to the show. I gave you a brief introduction. I wish I'd had more time or taken more time to look up more about your group. I do want to compliment you on your website. It is a well-laid-out website. People, you can visit that at 417paranormalresearchgroup.com. So that's where we are. That's who we're talking to tonight. And I'll just ask you two. Matt, you start off. Tell me a little bit about how the group got started.
Well, basically, we started our group just out of a hobby. We just wanted to learn a little bit more about the paranormal, and we thought maybe we'd do right by asking, helping our clients that we do get to better understand the unexplained and basically just prove that they're not crazy.
Well, now you don't actually prove they're not crazy. You just prove that's not a symptom.
I guess that was a poor choice of words.
We're very down to earth on this show. Now, I understand from what I've read about you. Now, you consider yourself the skeptic of the group. Now, Heather, you're a little less skeptical from your background that I read. Tell us about yourselves.
Yes. Oh, wow. I just grew up with it ever since the beginning I can remember. Just paranormal experiences left and right. Growing up in a religious home, of course, stuff doesn't happen. And then as I got older, I'm like, I know what I'm seeing kind of stuff. And started out with a group of friends. And we didn't really, I'll just put a point blank. We weren't really respectful. And I didn't know until I actually joined a local group after I left the other group how what actual respectful and the true ghost hunting was, really, you know, how it really is.
Are you saying that the original group you were with followed more of what I would call the ghost adventures method?
Yeah, you can say that, like trespassing and stuff. I hate to say that,
okay.
I mean, yeah.
So that it was more a lack of respect for property.
We weren't respectful and they shouldn't.
Well, but you're saying it was more of a lack
property
of respect.
Yeah, property and people. I mean, we would actually...
Go ahead. You're allowed to talk over me.
I'm sorry?
You're allowed to talk over me. Just keep talking.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it was just people and property. I mean, we would vote to kind of thing. It was bad. It's not really what ghost hunt's about.
Now, I understand that growing up with it, you kind of bounce around between what you... the title you accept, but it looks like you've settled into the sensitive title. As a sensitive, I would assume that you were really uncomfortable with the provoking part of that.
Yeah. very uncomfortable. That's one of the reasons why I left that little circle of friends, because, I mean, being sensitive, I don't really like to be, I don't really like to say it. I mean, being sensitive, I mean, you can hear them and see them, and it wasn't pleasant, you know, if they weren't, I mean, we would pick them off a lot of times.
One thing I want to point out to you, Heather, you're not talking to a skeptic here. I don't claim to be. You show me evidence, and I will pick it apart. But when it comes to the concept of being a sensitive, the abilities and everything, I'm going to tell you right here, I'm willing to sit here and hang on your every word. I personally am not to that point. I've got people that are trying to educate me, you might say, and turn on that little switch that allegedly most of us have. But I am very interested in that aspect. Now, Matt, I'm going to ask you a question. Having worked with psychics and mediums and sensitives, does she get a little annoying sometimes on an investigation? Or does she behave?
She has moments. I mean, she can be a little irritating at times, but it's just that, you know, we're in there to do the job. We're there to get evidence, and, you know, she just wants to make sure everything is done properly. you know, in, you know, a reasonable amount of time. Irritating, she's just well, if I say it, she's a, you know, a typical woman when it comes to getting something done.
Okay, well, that's, I was going for the sexist angle, but thank you very much for bringing that up. Now, the actual email, 417-PRD, now I understand, Heather, you know, you've worked with the group you didn't like, and you worked with another group that was much better and taught you a lot. How long has 417 actually been in the field?
We started in 2009 when we started.
Okay, well, even with as a continuing yourself a new group, you've been out there long enough and stuck around it long enough. Now, Matt, I know that since you're playing both sides of the fence here, like I do, you try to have the technical side and you have the sensitives on the team. Give me a brief description of how your team works when they go on to a location.
Well, briefly speaking, we go into a client's house, we do a general walkthrough, we kind of find out what the hotspots are. We decide then where we're going to set up our equipment to try to capture said hotspots. We ask, I guess you can call them standard questions, you know, why are you here? Do you have a message? You know, things of that nature. And then from time to time, we'll take a cigarette break or something like that. And if something has happened, we go outdoors and we discuss, something had happened, and just to kind of clarify, kind of keep an eye out for what to look out for. We just pass that information back and forth because you don't always investigate as a group as a whole. We usually break up our groups, you know, one or two groups or whatever the case may be. And, you know, we just kind of I don't know, I guess you could just say, you know, it's like a standard investigation, I guess. You know, we try to figure out what's going on, try to debunk as much as we can if it can be debunked. I guess in the short, I guess it's probably about the gist of an investigation.
Okay, you make sense, and the fact that you could actually answer that says volumes about yourself. You actually had an answer for it. What would you say your team, does it have a stated mission? I mean, do you have a mission statement? Do you have something that you hope to accomplish, or is it just a matter of curiosity? How would you define that?
Well, our mission is pretty simple. We try to help our clients better understand the unexplained. I mean, you know, a lot of people that a lot of clients that we go and visit, you know, they more or less just want validation. They want to know what's going on. They want if it's going to hurt them. So we try to do our best to help explain the unexplained.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, would you how many people are in your group that would normally go on investigation? I'm not saying they'd all work one time, of course, but how many people do you usually try to get around with you?
Really depends on the size of the investigation or the property that we're investigating. Usually it's like six of us, and we break into groups of three. But it really depends. Like the one that we're doing next weekend is we're only needing three people to do it because it's really small. So it really depends on where we go and
okay.
what we're doing.
Okay.
On
now,
if we need more or not.
Now, I did read on your website that you don't even claim to have all of the bells and whistles they have on TV. What equipment do you rely on mostly when you do? Let's just say you're doing a typical residential investigation. What is the main actual equipment, electronics that you rely on?
Cameras. We have like Sony, like mini DVD cameras. We have two of those. One's actually a hybrid, so it has like one of those Sony Duo sticks in it. We use just regular digital cameras as well. We have, we just gained some because we got a new member and they have some equipment. We have quite a bit of, like, audio stuff. Yeah, we have a lot of, like, recorders. When we first started, we actually couldn't afford recorders, so we only had, like, two official recorders. So we started using MP3 players that recorded. And, in fact, a lot of our EVPs on our website are from a MP3 player. So we have those. We still use those to this day, so it gives us extra ones. We have a ghost meter, K2 meter. Crud, I don't even remember all the stuff we have now. I got to update our website on that, on the equipment.
No, that's cool. You're telling me
yeah,
you've got
just
the
basics.
Now, when you go into a location, a home, now, do you think it's more important to collect as much data as possible or to spend more time trying to figuring out what is behind the claims at the location? Because you're only in a location for X amount of time.
We actually do half and half, to be honest with you. We do collect as much as we can, but also try to figure out what might be causing it. So it's really half and half. So to be honest with you, both of them are really what we strive for.
Now, I will compliment you. Like I said, on your website, you do see where you do post a lot of your data for review out there. I didn't really get into it. I didn't see where you made a lot of judgment calls on it because a lot of people just love to make, you know, oh boy, this is so-and-so. I didn't notice a lot of that going on. Now, do any of your team members actively research the tools and the techniques, and more importantly, the tools that you do have? Do you have anybody that's really trying to make sure that you're using those tools the way they will best be leveraged? I guess I'm asking, does anybody give you
techniques? Yeah, Ken does a lot of research. We actually have a thing called a Frank's box or a spirit box, and it was getting a lot of interference whenever we were trying to, so it was hard to find out if it was actually something like an entity trying to use it to come through, or if it was actual answers that we were, or was it just a radio? So it was really hard to do. He actually researched, and we made what he called a Faraday cage, but it's basically a box of foil on it. And we made it to where it has less interference.
Okay.
He's the one that researched that, and we actually started using that. But he does a lot of our research, and Bill, our new member, he does a lot of research, too, as far as how that we're making sure that they're, you know, pretty up-to-date on what's going on out there.
Okay, that's a good thing to hear. I like to hear that a team usually has somebody at least trying to keep up on that and use their brain, even, you know, think about it a little bit. We've talked about the Faraday cage. Now, I've got some people that are in the chat room right now that aren't big fans of the Ghost Box. Now, I'll tell you, I like the Ghost Box, but I don't love the Ghost Box. Because it is so easy.
We're with you there.
Yeah. You know, I'll use it a little bit, but unless I get something fairly quickly that I can put my finger on and say, wow, that was really cool, you know. But now, on the Faraday cage, the Ghost Box, I can see its usefulness. Because what we've found out on the show is that that type of setup will help block out your standard AM/FM radio waves. Now, I will tell you one thing you need to watch for. It doesn't block out the lower radio waves down in the ELF and VLF. So you can still get interference from other radio sources that you would not think about. Just a little heads up there.
Yeah, we've found that out, too. So he's currently researching in other he had an idea he was going to talk to me about soon about maybe stuff that we can block out even more interference. We discussed that tonight before actually even right before the show, in fact. we've discussed, you know, options and stuff. We pretty keep up to date on that. We're fully aware of that. I mean, it is really hard. The Frank's Box is controversial, but we're with you too. I mean, there's a lot of interference. It took a while for us to figure out and learn how to use it. So it's very, I mean, it does, you have to train yourself. It's really hard. So
I do want to ask, okay, since you're sensitive now, I believe when I went through the profiles that I saw, by the way, I need to tell everybody that the 417, the reason I picked them out, they were chosen as the Ghost Hunters United website's investigator team of the month. And going through your profiles, now you're not the only one on the team that claims to be a sensitive to one degree or another, correct?
Well, she doesn't say she's sensitive, but she is. Yeah, yes, that's correct.
Okay, I'm not picking on sensitive.
And we have.
I try to throw that little skeptical tone in my voice to keep Carolyn happy in the chat room, but the reason I ask it that way, what do the sensitives try to contribute to an investigation?
Well, first of all, I'll say this. We don't, when on an investigation in front of the client, we're not going to say, hey, there's a man right next to you unless we have evidence like video or picture or something saying that it's there. So we don't think, and we think it's unprofessional of saying, hey, there's a man next to you and there's no evidence to prove it. So what we do, I mean, we basically use it for our purposes, knowing where to go next. Like where to, if we hear something that some people don't, like me and Mandy, a lot of times we'll hear stuff that other people don't, because we are sensitive, and we'll go to that room and we'll get, you know, answers on like our Frank's Box or our audio just, you know, by itself. We'll get answers or, you know, K2 hits and stuff like that. So, I mean, we use the abilities to know, basically, enhance the investigation.
Yeah, that's what I consider the proper way. Tell me which way to point the camera. Tell me what room. Techs will rely more on our group. We try to rely more on the sensitivities as far as where do we point the camera, rather than the claims that the homeowner might give us. We'll watch where the home, but a lot of times the homeowner, you know, it's a certain way of the hallway, so we'll watch that hallway and look. We find that's actually more of a debunking tool. You know, the light travels up when a car goes by, you know, something like that. But as I've said 1,000 times, I am not going to be the guy that said your grandmother did not come and sit with you on the bed. So being a sensitive now, okay, obviously,
yeah.
Heather, you believe in ghosts. Do you believe in ghosts as the classical definition, dead person, spirit, etc.? Now, I'm talking about your belief, not what you can prove to me.
Yes. I mean, I've known it. I mean, whenever I described to my dad, I've known it ever since when I was about probably 5 or 6, when I described my great-great-grandma to my dad to a T. Never seen a picture of her. She passed away before I was even born, and explained it to him, you know, exactly who was in my room, who I was talking to, and the message that she had for them. I mean, it was validated by my dad. I mean,
okay, so
I know.
You've got that life experience.
They were there.
And that makes sense to me.
I've seen him, so.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Now, Matt, now you said before you didn't have a great interest in the paranormal before you hooked up with Heather, correct?
Well, yeah, the way that's correct. I mean, I can say I've had some, previous experiences, if you will, but I just kind of slept in all this, you know, the paranormal isn't real. You know, I kind of just kind of blew it off. But then shortly after my own sister was killed to a drunk driver, I somehow felt that she was watching over me for a number of years. And Heather advised me that she felt that, you know, her presence was with me when, you know, we were, you know, out and about, whatever. That there was enough of an experience for me to say, okay, well, there's a possibility that there is some kind of paranormal, you know, activity. And then when I met up with Heather, she was ghost hunting with this other group. And it's like, well, why don't you find out if they would allow me to, you know, come along, maybe become a member, and just kind of further my own education, if you will, on the paranormal. See if there is, you know, if ghosts are real. You know, I want to feel it. I want to see it. You know, I won't really say touch it, but, you know, I just want to be able to experience it. And, well, to this day, I haven't really had any big experiences that would justify me to say, yes, the paranormal is real.
So, in other words, you either have to believe Heather or you're SOL.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've collected enough evidence with that previous group and our group that can say that, you know, there is something going on. But to hear me say, yeah, that's a ghost, that probably wouldn't happen, because, like, I'm a really big skeptic about it. You know, sometimes I question, you know, is this stuff being faked or you know, something like that. But I mean, I've collected enough evidence that there was something is going on.
Now, Matt, what is your favorite tools? You're not the sensitive of the bunch. When you go into a house, what is the tool? Now, I realize we all have to rely on our senses and our minds, and I don't like that cliche answer, you know. But what would you say is
right.
your favorite gadget?
My favorite gadget is I have to say the recorders, because if it captures anything, you can refer back to it. I like the spirit box, but that can sometimes be suggestive.
Oh, very, very much so.
So, I mean.
Okay, now I'm going to take you off in a little tangent here, because I caught some, and I think I saw Heather posted something on GHU. This is actually one of the questions, but actually I already know the answer. I understand that just last weekend you all ran into something that was a little more unusual.
Okay. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us that story.
Oh, wow. We right now at this point, we haven't gone over all of the evidence. We don't know what it was, to be honest with you. And that's one of the things, I mean, do what we do as far as, you know, ghost hunting or investigating, whatever you want to call it, there is that danger there of evil entities that are there. We can say that it is an evil entity that we encountered, whether it's a wreck or not. I don't know right at this particular point. I mean, we actually had to do an exorcism one of our own. So.
Okay, so now I've been through this. I realize it doesn't apply, you know, doesn't appeal to the skeptics, but I've seen something similar. Once again, I don't throw around the demon title very much. Now, so what you're saying is, you're basing it, I realize, completely on personal experience at this point, and that's perfectly fine. You, one of your team was affected.
Yes, and it's funny that the person that was affected actually is our other skeptic in our group. He was really affected, and he's. We just talked to him yesterday, and he's like, "I don't. It's unexplainable. It shouldn't have happened, because it doesn't. That stuff doesn't exist. What in the world? I mean, he's doing great. I mean, he's doing great now. I mean, he's fine. as opposed to last weekend. But he's doing better. He's okay.
Was it mostly an emotional thing? I mean, was it, you know, I realize you don't want to tell maybe too much to embarrass anybody or, you know, spill the beans before you go over the evidence. But, I mean, did he get sick? Did he just get emotional? What was it?
Oh, no, he didn't get sick. It was more or less like something took over his body, and he wasn't himself. Whenever you have an investigator ask you who are you, then that's kind of when you're like, uh-oh. that's when it started. Some other things that happened, and as far as, you know, GHU, I posted some of the stuff on there that happened. It's totally out of his character. The way he described it is that he was basically, it was him and his body, but he couldn't do anything. He couldn't have any control of what he was doing. It was not him. It was, he felt the emotions of whatever it was. Like, he felt it didn't want us there, that he wanted us to basically get out, that we just get the investigation done and get out and don't get any evidence, just go, kind of thing. He wanted us to leave immediately. That's the emotions he felt, is how he was describing it to us. But yeah, it was so totally not him. He's non-confrontational at all. I mean, he's soft-spoken. And that was totally opposite of what he was last week.
You said you used the word exorcism. Would it be too personal to ask exactly what you your group did to relieve him of this situation?
I can't speak for Ken. It was Ken and I that actually took care of him. I basically was just saying prayer protection over him whenever it came to a head. Ken put both hands on him. I put both hands on him. I was saying a prayer of protection, Lord's Prayer, St. Michael's Prayer, anything that I could think of, you know, just praying for him. And I don't know what Ken, I mean, he knows how to do exorcism, so I saw what he was doing. I was really paying attention to what he was doing. I was just concerned about my investigator. So, I mean, he's studied about it. He knows. I mean, he's learned from it from somebody who does exorcisms. I mean, he knows. So he said that's what he did. So I don't have any reason to doubt him.
Did the background claims of the location before you went in, did that give you any reason to think you were going to encounter something like that?
No, she didn't let us know that at the time. She let us know it when it happened that they were going on, but no, we had no inkling at all that it was going to be like. I mean, we've had a case like this before, but it was never to this. It wasn't to this extent. I mean, we've had a case. It was mild compared to this, and we didn't know. Otherwise, I would have taken more precautions, more measures ahead of time to protect my investigator. I mean, we would have been more mentally prepared and more, you know, prepared for this.
Right, right. And that's something that I'm torn because I hate to overplay the occasional dark side of the field. But at the same time, because especially to the, you know, to the public, you know, I don't want to scare people, but at the same time, while underplaying it one way, I do think that investigators have to have that mindset that every now and then, if, you know, how can I say this?
That there's a possibility for it to happen.
Yeah, from my standpoint, I am not a skeptic. I believe in ghosts. I believe in all that stuff. So I come at it with a prejudice. I fully admit that. And I try to get, now if somebody, now like in what the way you described him, I don't like to throw that stuff at a truly scientific team. I love scientific teams. I love skeptical people. I love skeptical teams. I don't want them to taint their belief structure with worrying about crosses and, you know, and personally I'm big into stones, protective stones and stuff. But that is something for the believer in the field, even if it's psychological, that you cannot overplay the possible dangers that can encounter.
We never thought it would happen to us. I mean, we never even thought about it until we actually had, I mean, we had a case just last year, and we never thought about it. I mean, because we would go to these and it would just be a typical investigation. We never even dreamed about it, and then it kind of happened. And you can bet you Skippy after this one, though, I mean, everyone, it doesn't matter what the claims are, we're going to definitely be well prepared for anything that might happen.
Just out of curiosity, and I'm totally off script now, and what type of precautions do you feel are appropriate going into investigations?
Well, before it was more or less like everybody say their own kind of prayer beforehand or something like that. I think we're going to start doing it at group. We talked about it this week, and we actually had a meeting yesterday. We talked about it, saying it as a group before going into it, you know, just asking for protection for it. We've actually been told by another group some good protection stones to carry. I mean, we've heard about it. I mean, it, I guess as far as protection stones, I mean, I handed them to our investigator last week, and he said it was burning himself, so I guess the protection stones work. So, I mean, we're going to start using those and just be more mindful, you know, that stuff could happen.
Matt, now, as the professed skeptic in the group, how do you feel about the situation?
I got mixed feelings on that. I'm not really sure which way to go away with it. I mean, it was definitely unexpected, something I've never imagined as having. And there is still a little bit of a questionable, you know, as to what was going on. But, you know, everything that I saw that particular night, it's believable. I mean, I don't know. I just thought it was just totally unexpected. I actually kind of think I kept myself away from it just before it all come to a head, as Heather put it.
Yeah.
I found myself going back inside the house and to finish setting up for the investigation, because it occurred, you know, not even, you know, 30 minutes into setting up our equipment into, you know, for the investigation. And then I heard somebody holler outside, and it's like, well, maybe I better go out there and see what's going on. When I went out there, by that time, it had settled down already. So I kind of missed a majority of it, but the aftermath was, you know, gave me that question, you know, whether it was, if it was believable or not. And listening to, you know, just a little bit of evidence that we've gone over, you know, I question whether I should have be such a skeptic on this particular situation.
No, never question whether you should be skeptical of a situation. Now, this happened outside, correct?
Yeah. Actually, it was inside and outside. Matt's kind of like an empath. He feels like the feelings, and I personally believe that he felt it inside, like subconsciously, to stay away. It was subconscious that he would stay away from it. It was more of like a subconscious protection kind of thing. I still believe to this day that that's what happened to him.
I think some people have a natural protection built in, and you call it empathy, you know, an empathic ability. I think sometimes it's a mental state, but now I used to call it when I was young. Have either of you read the or saw the movie The World According to Garp? I know it's a
great call. I think it's been a while, though. It was probably about 12 years ago.
The reason I bring that up is the term I used to use was the undertowed. And it goes back to a story about a little boy that was afraid to go in the water because they kept telling him to watch out for the undertow. And he thought they said undertowed. So he had this terrible monster imagined. And anytime he'd get a... I picked up on that. Anytime I got a bad feeling growing up, and for years, I called it the undertowed. And it served me well when I was young, got me out of a couple of DUIs. But in the paranormal field, it seems that I, for the most part, protect myself, you might say. And I don't necessarily, now in my case, I won't necessarily remove myself from a situation, but if I get in a place that I feel, I want to say oppressed, I mean, I can just feel my energy, you know, wrap around me, and I get very closed. And I call it my hard candy shell. And so I can actually relate to what you just told me. Now, the reason I was asking inside or out, we want to look at, were there any natural causes? I mean, you know, what was being said at the time? Is there anything that could have, was anybody saying anything that could have created the power of suggestion? If it was inside, you know, you got to worry about EMFs. You know, some people can just suddenly, you know, have a reaction to something.
What actually was going on when I think it actually started was we were inside the client's bedroom, and she was telling us where the hotspots were in the bedroom, and one of it was on the bed that she felt like she. She was being held down on the bed sometime. And that's when I kind of got a twinge in my, because it reminded me of our case that we had last year. And I said, I'm not going to lay on bed like I did at the old one. And the one that got affected, he was like, sure, I'll do it. So that's when I think it actually kind of happened, because, I mean, he was like, sure, no problem.
Lord, he jumped in with both feet because, being the skeptic, he wasn't worried about anything. And some things come up, you know, that it's hard for the amateur group to look at it, and that includes me. Don't think I'm talking down to you, but like it's been brought up in the chat room, some people can react to infrasound, which is and of course noises lower than we can hear with our human ears that. I mean, even tigers emit, you know, these sounds. I mean, there's different machines can do it. And that's something, it's hard to eliminate on one visit. But it's one of those things that would definitely be worth going back and maybe, you know, if you could find somebody that, a more controlled investigation, in other words, completely quiet. It's a very interesting story, and I could talk to you about it all night because it's not that unsimilar from an experience I had with someone in the group, but I get to look at that from a skeptical viewpoint, even though it really shifted my beliefs in the paranormal. There was a lot of things going on at the time that could the power of suggestion. You know, we you know things were being said that could have made this person freak out, for lack of a better word. But it,
no, you he, sound he's like grounded. He's real grounded. So it was crazy that I mean that it was him. The main he's even more skeptical than Matt. So it's kind of weird that it chose him.
Okay, now I'm gonna go off the skeptic grid now, so the people in chat room can give me a hard time about it. But what it sounds to me like, from what you've told me, I call it, well, they call it this on TV, but it always had a negative connotation. And, of course, in this case, it would. But I call it oppression. And it's not the demonic possession thing you see on Ghost Adventures. But I do think that some ghosts Once again, all disclaimers aside about whether ghosts are real, blah, 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 can project an emotional state on us. And it's not that unusual for the person does not believe to get that if the frequency's right, I guess. Because I know I was told a story about down to the Ross Opera House. Some guy was just sitting, a big muscular guy, you know, he was just there pretty much to keep his wife happy, and he started crying. And they said, "What the hell is wrong with you?" And he said, "I have no idea." And you know, it's a different emotion, but to a non-skeptic like me, the story you told me do not sound unreasonable, but I do wonder, okay, Carolyn in the chat room, how can we measure for these things, the infrasound, the EIFs, which is, I should know this, I read your book. But is there something, I'm going to ask you in the chat room, Carolyn, is there something they can go back now and try to dismiss those natural causes? Because I do know infrasound, to the right person at the right frequency, the harmonic convergence, if the right sound hits the right person, it can cause fear, anxiety, nausea, all the things that you see on TV where they attribute it to EMF sensitivity. The same things can actually happen from even a sensitivity to a particular sound. Experience-inducing fields. That's she just told me what it means. So I'll try to get some information on that, see if there's something you can actually measure for at that location. I do want to thank you all for coming on. We've sat here and we've talked away the show, and I want to say you've been a great guest. You are on Facebook. They can find you at 417 Paranormal Research Group, Springfield, Missouri. Easy enough to find. I plugged your website. Anything coming up in the near future that you want to plug?
Well, we have our friends at Infinity Paranormal is actually having here in Springfield on April 6th. They're having a paranormal conference. They're actually, I guess I can plug that for them. It's going to be, it starts at, I think, 10 o'clock, I think is what it is, from 10 to 10. And it's at the Shrine Mosque here in town. They're doing that because we're not able to do ours that we were going to do. So they decided to go ahead and do one here. So I can plug that. That's definitely going to be fun. There's name celebrities going to be speaking there. There's going to be local authors. My friend Janice Tremere is going to be speaking there. My friend Lisa Martin is going to be there. So they're local authors. And then some other ones. It's Ozarks Paracon. You can actually go to their website, ozarksparacon.com.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in tonight. And thanks once again to my guest. Stay tuned, everybody, for Doomsday Prepper Radio coming up next on Paranormal. This has been Paranormal Filler with Wes Forsythe and my guest tonight, 417 Paranormal Research Group.
Thanks.
For joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com.